Okay, let's get started here. I welcome all you to this lecture on cloud liquid water measurements. Glad so many people are here today to hear this presentation. We will try to do this in two parts since I anticipate it will be a little bit long for a 50-minute talk. So somebody needs to stop me about 50 minutes. We'll take a 15-minute break and then maybe 20 minutes or half an hour to finish it up, I would estimate. Also, please ask questions as we go along. Just interrupt me with any questions that anybody has. To clarify anything that you have questions about, things I skip over. And this is kind of a continuation of the previous talk I gave where I talked about the FSSP and how we measure the cloud droplet concentrations, the spectrum from the FSSP. This one's on liquid water measurements. So why are we interested in making liquid water measurements? For this project, it's very important for determining the potential for enhancing precipitation. We want to seed in the clouds that have a lot of liquid water in them. We also done work, I've done a lot of work with liquid water measurements in terms of icing studies where we talk about aircraft icing. If you ever go up with us on these missions and it's cold out and we have super cool liquid water, it will ice up the aircraft wings and the probes. Particularly, we had problems with the 2DC instrument where we couldn't run the heaters on the instrument. So then you get ice forming on the tips of the instruments. So the water is cold, hits the aircraft, and it freezes and causes ice. And so this is important for aviation safety. It's another reason. The other one is for remote sensing measurements. If you do a crowd sat, when we do underpasses underneath the crowds, the satellites will measure liquid water or liquid water path, which is an integrated in the vertical of liquid water. So to compare with satellite measurements, you've got to calculate the liquid water, determine the liquid water path by the thickness of the crowd, and then you can compare it to the satellites. Okay, for the King Air research aircraft we're using in this project, there's two instruments that will measure liquid water on the aircraft. The first one is the FSSP, the forward scattering spectrometer probe, which is a picture here on the left wing of the aircraft. So many of you have seen the aircraft yesterday. And this goes back to my previous talk where we measured the concentration of the cloud droplet spectrum, and then we derive liquid water from it. And that's what I give in this slide, is the formula to calculate liquid water content from the FSSP instrument. So amount of liquid water for a given volume of air through math through the integration of the cloud droplet distribution. So you have a volume of air where you're sampling the cloud droplet spectrum. So on the FSSP, we have a number of channels. So on a basic FSSP, you have 15 channels. We have an SPP version of it on this project, which gives us 20 channels to measure the droplet spectrums into different channels, so different size intervals. So we want to sum up all them channels, the number of particles in each one of the channels, and then we have the diameter of the particles in that channel. So for example, the first channel goes from 3 to 5 microns. So we'll take 4 as the diameter. So basically the average of the channel. And then you cube that to get a volume. So this diameter with this pi over 6 gives you the volume of a sphere. So this assumes a spherical droplet. And then we have the density of water in grams per meter cubed. So it's density of water. And you come up with a liquid water content. So it gives you the amount, basically the grams of water per volume of air. The one thing to notice is you got this d to the third here. So before I took a lot of time figuring out them channel volumes, or not boundaries, excuse me, the channel boundaries. And so if you're off by a little bit in your channel boundaries, particularly at the big ones, and you cube this, it becomes a big error. Because you're taking a small error and then you cube that error. So that can give you a potential big source of errors. So I'm going to stop here. Any questions? Are you pretty happy? Oh, we got one.
The meaning of this sum was pi.
This?
Next paragraph.
Yeah. That's just pi. Yeah, so this, this is pi over 6 in the diameter here, so that gives you a volume of a sphere. Remember, it's usually 4/3 pi r squared, pi r cubed, to give you when you work in radians, but if you work in diameter, it's pi over 6. So that's 3.14 to give you the volume. And then, of course, we're assuming a spherical drop, which they are.
Density of water like 1 or depend of some
No, just basically
over
use
over the, basically 1.
Yeah, just basically 1.
Okay.
So it's a
I know it's very narrow variation, it's nothing.
Yeah. So it's a constant in the data processing, but that's a good question. So we just put a constant value in for that. Okay, March 13th flight up to Ohio. I don't know, Brad was on the flight. I was on the flight, I think Shaw.
It's not Ohio, it's other city.
Hali.
Hali.
Oh yeah.
Sorry. If we want.
Hale. Up north. And so we got a time on the x-axis and hour, minutes, and seconds, UTC, or GMT time actually in this case. So we got about 40 minutes of data here. This was taken up at 19,000 feet and it was cold, minus 16. We should have maybe went down a little lower to get what a warmer temperatures. But you did have liquid water below freezing at minus 16 observed here. So this is the concentration in grams per cubic centimeter from the FSSP pool. And what we are doing on this flight, we're staying at 19,000 feet, and you could see the tops of the crowds. So you fly through the crowds, here, and then you come out of them. So this is typical when you go in seed. You'd fly into a crowd like this for a couple of seconds, 10, 20, 30 seconds, maybe up to a minute, and you drop your AGI flares in here with the idea that you want to convert that liquid water to ice. But the important thing to know is how much liquid water we have in the clouds. so that you know how much you can do. So, and some of them have more than others. You know, we've had some more ones here, 0.2, higher ones, up to 0.8. This is a line series, and this is actually 10 hertz data. So you see it goes up to quite high values, relative, 0.7 liquid water concentration. So that's a measurement from about a week ago. So that is the FSSP. Now I want to talk about the DMT liquid water content probe, sometimes referred to as a King probe, but it's not really a King probe. It's a new version of a King probe. So one of the things I'm learning about is I've used King probes a lot in the past. This one's slightly different, but it's the same basic concept. But I refer to it as just a hot wire of liquid water probe, is to distinguish it from the original King probe instrument. So this sits on the ref wing of the aircraft. Maybe some of you saw me trying to measure the wire here yesterday. So you see right here is the actual sensing element, the hot wire that makes the measurement. And I don't, it's pretty small. I zoomed in on this image. So how many remember this from yesterday that was out there? Everybody, raise your hand. No? Couple people? So that's the instrument we're going to talk about next. So that wire or that coil, it's more of a, referred to as a coil, that copper. So when I refer to a coil or a wire, it's this piece right in here. It's not the green, it's just the little wound coil or wire. So the coil is heated to a temperature, and I was reading the manual yesterday and I discovered something that the King probe goes to 185°C, but the DMT probe only goes to 125°C. So this is one thing I have to change in my process in between these two instruments, is the temperature of that wire that it's heated to. So this 185 is for the King probe, it's 125 for the DMT probe. But it's a constant temperature. And the important thing is it's above 100 Celsius. The coil supplies energy in the form of heat to vaporize droplets. So if you imagine you're going through a crowd, you got all these little drops, crowd droplets in there, they will impact upon this wire. And so you got a little bit of water on that wire, and it's at 125 Celsius, so it's going to evaporate. And so it takes energy to evaporate them droplets. And the power supplied to the coil is the energy over time. So it's how much power you got to supply to the droplet, to the coil to evaporate the droplets. So you have the power that you supply to the coil in the form of electricity or electric current, and you have two terms. You have a dry term and a wet term. So the dry term is if there's no crowds. You're just going through the air. And this is the conduction. You know, you got something hot, you got air molecules hitting it, it will conduct heat away from the wire. Then you have the wet term, which is due to the crowd droplets, because you're evaporating the crowd droplets. So I'll pause here to ask a question. What other term would you think that we're neglecting here? What other way would you dissipate power or heat from the wire?
Ambient
I heard humidity, but this will depend on humidity, maybe. But if you think of something that's warm, how does it lose energy? I mean, it's going to lose energy for the droplets because you have you got to vaporize them droplets. You got to latent heat there. This term is the conduction term, where you're conducting, the air molecules are conducting heat away. Yeah, there's a radiative term. So you can do plus a radiative term, just radiative heating, radiative loss, because any warm surface will radiate heat away. So that was a question, that's very small. So we just neglect that compared to the other two terms. But just to get you thinking a little bit about the what goes in here. So that term's neglected. Okay, any questions? Don't want to go too fast. So we're going to do a couple slides here with some equations, some math to show you the algorithm that has to be programmed to process this data, to emphasize that the reason to learn algebra and calculus and how we use it to process our data. So I want to look at both the dry and wet term individually now, and we'll start with the dry term. Energy is transferred to passing air molecules due to thermal conduction of the air. This is a function of the airspeed, or the true airspeed of the aircraft. So think of it, if you got more molecules hitting your body, you're going to conduct that heat away from you faster. Pressure, more molecules in the air, it's going to conduct the heat faster. Also, function of temperature, or more importantly, the temperature difference between the wire and the air. So if you have a larger temperature difference, you're going to have larger, faster conduction away from the two. So there is a couple of things that are hidden in here. You can go back to your basic thermodynamics, put in these terms. But for now, we simplify a little bit. Just put in a couple of constants. Use the temperature difference, the density of the air, and V is your true airspeed of the aircraft. And you have another X term. So I've simplified this a little bit from the fundamental thermodynamic equation of heat conduction.
You've got that term, P defined as pressure. Is it actually, as it appears, is it actually pressure or is it density?
I think it's density. It's density.
It would make more sense if it's
amphitheater density.
Yeah.
Good. I have to fix that.
It's a row.
Yeah, it's a row. It's density term. So we actually, we measure pressure and temperature and calculate density. But I'm pretty sure it's density that enters in this form of the equation. I could check, but I think it's just mislabeled. Okay, one person's watching me. So you gotta watch all these equations. Okay, so that's the dry term. Again, you have this X term, but it should be larger density, conduct the air away faster, larger airspeed will conduct it away faster, and a bigger temperature difference. So empirically, it kind of makes sense for the terms. Okay, now the wet term. Energy is transferred to heat droplets to the boiling plate and then vaporize them. So you got a droplet in the air, basically at the ambient air temperature, you got to raise it to the boiling point, and then you evaporate that droplet. And so you got two terms here. Basically, you got change in temperature and then the rate and heat of vaporization term. So it's a function of mass of the droplets. So this is a wet term, and I got approximately because of some, a little bit neglecting some terms in here. But it's the amount of water you have on that wire in terms of mass. Okay. Then it's the amount of wire you have. It's the length and diameter of that wire, which is important. So yesterday I was measuring that wire and the diameter. I had Todd measure the diameter of that wire. So I want to check and make sure my data process and uses the right length and diameter for them wires. I mean, think about it. If the diameter is a little bit bigger, you're going to have more surface area. So you need to know that. And then wires, we had a couple percentage difference in the diameter of some wires. I remember with the old King probes, we found like up to 10% difference in the diameters. So I was checking that. Airspeed, latent heat of vaporization, that's just a constant. Specific heat of water, boiling point of water, go into the equation. So remember thermodynamics. That kind of makes sense. Any problems with this equation? Should be linear with these terms. Yep. Basically them. Again, the temperature difference.
And
TA is the air temperature. Sorry.
When you've got the boiling point of water in there, so is that corrected for pressure?
No. I don't think that refinement's in the processing. What is it? Well, yes and no.
I see.
Okay, we'll take a break, and then when I come back, I'll tell you why it's yes and no.
we'll have the answer. Is it yes or no? It's maybe.